Welcome to Money is Freedom, a podcast exploring how finance and freedom connect in our lives. Created from thoughtful research and narrated by Notebook LM AI, this series brings you clear, meaningful insights into finance and beyond. Welcome to episode 26, where we examine the recent market correction and crypto's resilience compared to traditional equities. Despite factors like strong employment data and inflation concerns, Bitcoin and Ethereum have shown strength. The episode also discusses how 2025 seems to be breaking Bitcoin's historical pattern of January corrections. The crypto market reacted positively to recent CPI data, while the traditional stock market showed only modest recovery. The podcast highlights the evolving relationship between traditional and crypto markets and crypto's increasing resilience.
All right, buckle up, everybody. Because today, we're diving headfirst into market corrections.
Yeah, it's a hot topic right now.
You know, both the stock market and crypto have been taking a beating.
Definitely a bit of a roller coaster ride lately.
But here's a thing that's got me curious. Crypto seems to be bouncing back way faster.
It's interesting, right?
So we're going to try and figure out why, using this article from Medium.
Sounds good to me.
Why crypto is showing resilience amid broader market turbulence.
Okay, yeah, I saw that article. Catchy title.
And just to tease you all a little bit, Bitcoin might actually be breaking its own rules this time around.
Oh, that's interesting. People always say Bitcoin follows these patterns.
Well, we're about to find out. Right. So first things first, let's break down why we're seeing this correction in the first place. What happened? What spooked everyone?
Well, a lot of it boils down to jobs.
Jobs. Okay.
That December 2024 jobs report, remember?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It was way stronger than anyone expected.
A lot more jobs added than we thought.
Yeah, way more. 256,000 new jobs.
Wow.
When the prediction was only 160,000.
So that's good news, right?
Well, it's good for the economy on the surface, but...
But, wait, explain that to me. More jobs, how is that a bad thing?
Okay, think of it like this. Imagine there's only a certain number of swings on a playground.
Okay, got it.
But then all of a sudden, like, tons of new kids show up.
Yeah, and they all want to use the swings.
Exactly. More kids wanting to swing, that means more demand.
Right, so more people working means more money to spend.
Exactly. More people with money to spend means higher prices.
So basically, more jobs equals...
inflation.
Ah, I see. So this strong jobs report is making everyone worried about inflation.
Right, and that low unemployment rate too, only 4.1%. It all just kind of adds fuel to the fire. Investors are worried the Fed might have to raise interest rates to cool things down.
Okay, so interest rates, remind me how this all works again.
Basically, when interest rates go up, it gets more expensive to borrow money.
Right, right, like credit cards and loans.
It affects companies too, costs them more to do business, slows down growth. Cuts into profit.
So investors see interest rates going up and they start to panic.
Pretty much. They start selling off stocks, especially in sectors that are sensitive to interest rate hikes, you know, like tech.
Yeah, because the stock market is all about what people think is going to happen in the future, right?
Exactly. If investors think future growth is going to be slow because of high borrowing costs, they're not going to want to pay as much for stocks today.
Makes sense. And we saw that play out big time with those Magnificent Seven tech stocks, didn't we? Apple, Microsoft, Google, the whole gang, they all took a hit.
Yeah, they did.
The article says they're down an average of 14.1%. Ouch.
Yeah, and it's not just those big companies.
What do you mean?
Well, the Russell 2000, you know, the one that tracks smaller companies, that's down too.
Oh, wow. So this is like a widespread correction, not just limited to tech.
It is. It's back down to where it was before the election, pretty much across the board.
Right. So we've got the inflation worries, rising interest rates, investors hitting the panic button, selling off stocks. But crypto took a hit too, didn't it?
It did, yeah.
I thought crypto was supposed to be this decentralized, separate system. What happened there?
Well, in theory, yes. But at the end of the day, crypto is still a market.
So?
And markets are driven by people, by how they feel. When there's a big shift in how much risk people want to take, like we've seen with this correction, even something like crypto can feel it.
Even though it's supposed to be separate.
Exactly. So even though crypto has its own unique dynamics, it's still kind of swimming in the same ocean as the stock market.
Okay, so everyone's getting tossed around by the same waves.
Pretty much.
But here's what I don't get. Stocks and crypto both went down, but crypto seems to be bouncing back much faster.
It is.
Our article calls it crypto's resilience. Why is that? What's making crypto so much more resilient compared to the regular stock market?
Well, there are a couple of things at play. One of the biggest things is institutional adoption.
Institutional adoption. So like the big players are getting involved.
Exactly. Hedge funds, pension funds, you name it. They're starting to get into crypto. And that brings a lot of money, a lot of capital.
Right. It probably makes it seem more legit. Like it's not just for tech nerds anymore.
Exactly. It's becoming mainstream. And one of the biggest drivers of that has been the approval of spot Bitcoin ETFs.
Oh, yeah. Those ETFs. But remind me how those work again.
Well, basically, ETFs make it really easy for everyday investors to get exposure to Bitcoin through their brokerage accounts.
Okay, so they don't have to go through the hassle of setting up a crypto wallet or figuring out all the technical stuff.
Exactly. It's like a pre-made salad mix from the grocery store. You don't have to chop all the veggies yourself.
That's a good analogy.
So these ETFs have been a big deal for mainstream adoption of crypto.
Okay, so institutional adoption and these ETFs, they're making a difference. Mm. What else is helping crypto stay strong?
The crypto market itself is just maturing. It's becoming more liquid, easier to buy and sell large amounts without huge price swings. We're also seeing more sophisticated platforms and financial instruments emerge. The whole ecosystem is getting stronger.
So it's not the Wild West anymore. Like, there's a sheriff in town now.
Exactly. It's becoming a more mature and efficient market, which means it's not as susceptible to those crazy price swings we used to see.
And on top of that, crypto operates separately from the regular financial system, right?
Yeah.
So it's not as affected by those interest rate hikes that are causing so much stress in the stock market.
Right. It's got a degree of insulation from those macroeconomic forces.
So even though crypto got caught in the same wave as stocks, it's got a different kind of surfboard.
I like that. Yeah, it's riding the wave differently.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But there's one more thing that's got me scratching my head. You mentioned earlier that Bitcoin might be breaking its own rules.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
Well, it has to do with this historical pattern Bitcoin tends to follow, especially after a halving year.
Halving year. Okay, I have no idea what that means. Fill me in.
So every 4 years, Bitcoin's code actually cuts the rate of new Bitcoin creation in half.
Oh, wow. So like less Bitcoin is being made.
Exactly. And that can impact the price because you have less supply coming into the market.
Right. That makes sense. So less Bitcoin being created usually means the price goes up.
It can, yeah. Think of it like a limited edition sneaker drop or something. The fewer pairs there are, the more people are willing to pay.
I get it. Scarcity drives up the price.
Right. But here's the thing. After a halving year, Bitcoin has typically seen a dip in January.
Really? A dip? I thought less supply meant higher prices.
It usually does. But we saw this pattern in 2017 and 2021, both times after a halving year. Bitcoin dropped around 30% in January.
Wow, so it's like clockwork. Every halving year, Bitcoin goes on sale in January.
Pretty much. It's almost like it has its own little calendar.
So what about this year? Did Bitcoin dip again in January?
Well, that's where things get interesting. This year, it seems like that big market correction we talked about, it kind of acted like an early January correction for Bitcoin.
Early. So it dipped before January.
Yeah. Bitcoin dropped from about $108,000 on December 31st to around $92,000 by January 14th.
That's a pretty big drop, but not quite 30%, right?
Right. So it's not following that typical pattern this time.
So what's going on? Is Bitcoin breaking its own rules?
It seems that way. And this suggests that those macroeconomic forces we talked about, the interest rates, the inflation worries, they're actually having a bigger impact on Bitcoin's price this time around than its own internal cycles.
So even though Bitcoin is supposed to be separate from the traditional financial system, it's still getting affected by what's happening in the stock market.
It seems that way. It's almost like the stock market's problems kind of front-run Bitcoin's usual January dip.
So all that stuff happening in the stock market with investors worrying about interest rates and inflation, it kind of spilled over into crypto.
Yeah, exactly. Like, even though those kids on the playground are playing their own game with Bitcoin, they're still in the same playground, and they can still feel the overall mood.
That makes sense. So it's not that Bitcoin is breaking its own rules. It's just that there are bigger forces at play this time.
It seems that way. It shows how Bitcoin, even though it's decentralized, is becoming more integrated with the broader financial world.
That's really interesting. Okay, so we've got this unusual Bitcoin behavior, and it's all tied to what's happening in the stock market. But then we also have this new CPI data that just came out, right?
Yep, on January 15th.
The CPI, that's the Consumer Price Index, which measures inflation, right?
That's right. And everyone's been watching it closely to see if inflation's finally starting to slow down.
So what did the CPI data say?
Well, the numbers were interesting. The headline CPI, which measures overall inflation, came in at 2.9%.
And that was pretty much what people were expecting, right?
Right. Yeah, right in line with expectations. But the core CPI, which excludes more volatile things like food and energy prices, was actually a bit better than expected.
Oh, so core CPI is like a more stable measure of inflation.
You could say that. It came in at 3.2%.
Which is better than expected, you said.
Yeah, slightly better.
So is that good news for the markets?
Well, it depends on which market you're looking at.
What do you mean?
The cryptocurrency market reacted really positively to the CPI data.
Really? How so?
Bitcoin surged back up towards $100,000.
Wow, that's a big jump. But why did the crypto market react so positively?
It all has to do with what happened to 10-year U.S. Treasury yields.
Okay, back up for a second. Yields. Why are those so important again?
Remember those swings on the playground we talked about?
Yeah, the ones with limited supply and high demand.
Well, think of bond yields as the cost of renting a swing set for a year. When those yields are high, it's like the rental price is expensive and investors are more likely to stick with their safe, boring backyard swing set.
I see. So bonds are like the safe option.
Yeah, generally speaking. But when those yields dip, it's like the rental price for that fancy new swing set suddenly becomes a lot more appealing.
So lower yields make riskier assets like crypto look more attractive.
Exactly. Because the safe option isn't paying as much. And this makes sense when you think about how Bitcoin is becoming more widely seen as a potential hedge against inflation. If people aren't as worried about inflation, they might not be as interested in those hedges.
Right, because if inflation is cooling down, you don't need as much protection against it.
Exactly. So when that core CPI number came in better than expected, it caused those 10-year Treasury yields to dip a bit. And that made riskier assets like crypto more attractive.
So crypto got a boost from the CPI news because it made the safe option less appealing.
Exactly. Investors are always looking for the best return for their money. And when safe investments aren't paying as much, they're more likely to take on a little more risk.
That makes sense. But what about the stock market? Didn't it also get some good news from the CPI data? I mean, inflation seems to be cooling down, so shouldn't investors be happy about that?
Logically, yes. But the stock market's reaction was much more muted than the crypto markets.
Really? Why is that?
The Russell 2000, for example, only saw a small bump.
So the stock market didn't really care that much about the CPI news.
It did to some extent, but those high bond yields are still a big factor. They're still drawing investors away from stocks. It's like the stock market is still sulking about those higher borrowing costs we talked about earlier.
Like it can't quite shake off the worry that the economy might slow down.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. The CPI data was a step in the right direction, but it hasn't completely erased those concerns about inflation or a potential slowdown.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. We talked about the reasons behind the stock market correction, how crypto is showing resilience, and even how Bitcoin might be deviating from its usual post-halving year pattern. And then we dove into how the latest CPI data impacted both markets in different ways.
We have, yeah. It's fascinating to see how everything is connected.
Okay, so after all that, what does this mean for, like, the average investor, someone like me or our listeners, trying to make sense of all this market craziness? What should we be doing?
I think the biggest takeaway is you got to pay attention to everything.
Everything.
Both the traditional economic stuff like interest rates and jobs reports, but also the stuff that's unique to crypto.
Like what?
Like institutional adoption, who's getting involved, are more big players coming in? Also, you know, what's happening with blockchain technology, any new developments, and of course, what are governments doing? Are there new regulations coming? All of that can affect the crypto market.
So you're saying we have to be bilingual?
Yeah, kind of. You got to speak Wall Street and the metaverse.
No problem. I'm a fast learner. But speaking of learning, this whole Bitcoin January anomaly thing, that was a real eye-opener for me. You're saying that macroeconomic forces are actually driving Bitcoin's price more than its own internal cycles this time around. So what does that mean for people who base their trading strategies on those cycles? They're kind of out of luck, right?
Yeah, it's a good question. Those strategies might need to adapt. If we keep seeing these early Bitcoin corrections, those traders could be caught off guard.
It's like showing up to a party a day early because you got the date wrong.
Haha, exactly. It just highlights how important it is to be flexible and stay informed, especially with something as fast-moving as crypto.
Well, I think we've given our listeners a lot to think about today. We talked about the reasons for the market correction, crypto's resilience, this interesting Bitcoin January anomaly, and how that CPI data shook things up. I feel like I learned a ton. Any final words of wisdom before we wrap things up?
I'd say stay curious, keep learning, and don't be afraid to ask questions. And always remember, investing is a marathon, not a sprint.
Well said. All right, everyone. That's our deep dive into market corrections and crypto surprising strength. Until next time, stay informed and keep riding those waves.